If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Off the start, yeah, I just started calling banks, and it was like, no. Everywhere I went, it was like the Colonel Sanders story. I was just going around, and everybody was saying no.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Glenn Sutherland is a real estate investor from Cambridge, Ontario, where he lives with his wife and two children. He started his investing journey purchasing buy and hold rental real estate locally, and after a lot of research, he learned of more favorable laws, lower property taxes, and lower cost of entry south of the border. He also hosts the podcast and YouTube channel entitled A Canadian Investing in the U.S., where he provides information and advice to investors interested in investing in both Canada and the U.S. Glenn owns properties in both Canada and the USA and understands the advantages for investing cross-border to achieve higher ROI on his investments. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this, Sam.
Man, this is great. This is great. I think you are the first person I have interviewed that has really taken their portfolio and scaled it out of country. And so if you can kind of give us an idea, I don't know, I've talked to some other guys, but I'm not sure that they've quite scaled theirs maybe like you have. So if you can give us an idea, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there?
Yeah, thank you. So I guess where I started, maybe I should put a quick context in too. If you are American, you're going to go, oh no, this is a guy who's talking about Canadian stuff. It is not. I did start with Canadian real estate, but I am an American real estate investor. That's where I buy all my real estate now. So this isn't one to tune out to, because I'm hoping I'll try to add some value for everyone so that there's some good takeaways in here. But anyway, the story is I did start buying real estate in my backyard, like most people do. I live about an hour and a half from Toronto, and I was buying in my backyard. I bought a bunch of single family houses. I bought some duplexes, and things were going along, and I was making some money. And I was like, you know what? This is this could go. I just need to keep buying more and more properties. But as everybody knows, you start to run into financing problems. You start to realize that maybe I should backtrack a little bit. Back when you start talking like 5-6 years ago, the podcasting world was American real estate. Like it was, I never listened to any shows from Canada. So What I was learning was American real estate. Mm. And I was sucking it in like 6 hours a day of, of listening to these things, listening to books. I still to this day read a book every single month. I do a book club, and I just try to soak in as much. Like I will never claim that I know everything. But I'm a good student, and I'm going to continue to learn as much as I can. But anyway, I was buying all these houses in my backyard. Banks starting to say, you know, I'm coming up with a spreadsheet. I'm like, oh, if I just keep buying them, they make $300 a month. I'm going to have like so many houses. If I keep refiing and pulling equity out, and then the banks are like, you can't keep doing this. Like, not with like conventional lending. You can't do this. You're going to max out at like, you know, I think that was at 8 or something at the time, and they're like, I don't think you're even going to make it to 10. We're like 10's the limit right here. And I'm like, you're not going to get there. So I started thinking like, okay, well, I listened to all this American stuff. I feel I've got a good grasp of it. I have like all these notes about the cross border part, right? Like how we should be, for instance, setting up an LP instead of an LLC or a C corp. We can't do S corps as Canadians. And if you're going to use an LLC, you need to make it as like a daughter company so that there's an LP at the top. It's because Canada doesn't have an equivalent of an LLC. We have like equivalent to a C corp. We have equivalent to an LP, but we don't have the same structure as an LLC. So what happens is a lot of times they'll treat it like as if it's a C corp, like in equivalent. And so they're like, we're going to tax that as, you know, dividends, and then we're going to tax you on the personal, but because they don't have a flow through entity like that, right?
Right, right. Can you describe to our listeners just real quick the difference between those two and the key difference as it makes it to you as an investor? Because some people may not know.
I can do this really briefly, but in all honesty, I have a CPA in Dearborn, Michigan, and he's my rock for this stuff.
Right.
Basically, when you're doing a C corp or an S corp, I don't do as S corp, so I think they're similar to the C corps. You're pulling dividends, so you're taxed at a lower rate, but then that dividend is going to be taxed as personal income at a higher rate.
Right. So those are taxed twice.
Yes.
Right. As a C corp, you're taxed at the corporate level and the personal level versus an LLC where you're taxed simply, it's a flow through entity. So it goes to the bottom line of what Americans would call their 1040. And so we're taxed taxed only personally with an LLC as a flow through entity.
Exactly. Okay. And we don't have that equivalent. So the way around it was to set it up as an LP. They understand we have limited liability companies in Canada and they tax it the same way. They understand it flows through. That's how we do it in Canada. To get around any double taxing. Sure. A lot of people do use C-Corps. It is a good way to, especially if you're doing flipping or other things, which I'm sure you've had guests to talk about that sort of strategy. But if you're reusing cash, then you might as well pay at the low interest rate. And if you're not pulling it out, then why pay the extra tax, right?
But right, sure.
Anyway, we could talk tax the whole time, but that's not my specialty.
Let's not do that.
I understand enough for whenever people ask me how to do this.
Right.
But like I said, I always like, hey, go talk to my CPA. Here's exactly. His number. Go call him.
And maybe that's your first lesson of the day is find somebody smarter than you and hire them.
Oh, that's the key to everything. Right. That's the key to everything is to try and find a team that like ideally is like very knowledgeable, ideally smarter than you.
Right.
Anyway, back to the story. So, yeah. So I was going into the U.S. I'm like, why not get the U.S.? And then if I'm going to go into the U.S., I'm going to try to pick the best market in the entire country. Because right now I've been investing in my own in Ontario, which is a tenant friendly province. Okay. So it's very tenant friendly. It'd be like an equivalent of like California. Evictions are like 3-4 months. It's just everything runs slow, right? Like for that, the judgments are made in the tenant side. I'm like, I don't want to deal with that stuff at all anymore. If I'm going to go to the States, I'm going to pick I'm going to do some research and try to make a trifecta. So I was looking for landlord-friendly states, obviously, low taxes, low entry costs. I didn't want like those really expensive states. Like at the start, I loved Colorado, but I'm like, the prices are so expensive. So I'm like, our houses are very expensive here in Ontario. So I'm like, no, I'm going to pick a spot where I can do a lot of houses for a cheaper amount. What was the other one? I want advantage of the States. The U.S. have long-term loans. Canadian loans are typically 5 years, and where you guys have 30-30s, where we don't have that. It doesn't exist.
When you say 5 years, what do you mean? It's a five-year AM schedule as well?
No, a five-year term, and a 25 AM is typical.
Okay.
So a little different. That's a typical loan, right? Whereas in the States, you can get 30-30, so you can lock in your rate for a long period of time, which makes things more predictable.
Sure.
And you can always break that loan and go somewhere else, but you can scale that way out, and you know it's predictable. You know how it's going to go. That's why sometimes I sign up for like a 7-1 ARM in the States, but almost always I want the 30-year because you can always break it. You'll pay the fees, especially if you get into like year 5 to 7, there's usually no break fees anyway. So why not? Why do a 5-year?
Right.
And like, if you have a recession like 2009, you want to be able to ride it right through. You don't want that financing expiring in the middle. You don't want it. Anyway, that was a tip for you. And so when you're looking at low entry costs, I was looking at rent to values, right? So typically, if you're looking, every market's different, but if you're looking at like a $300,000 house, rent for $1,500, it's like a 0.5, right? But if you were going to go buy some of these, like in the Midwest, you're going to go into, say, Ohio or something, you can go buy a house for $50,000, they'll rent for over $1,000 a month, right? And so you're at the like 2%. You got to watch your neighborhoods, but there you can get it much higher rate of returns by picking different markets. So that's what I did. I basically made a chart and started like, okay, this is my favorite in this department. This is kind of my favorite in here. And I came down, I got down to about 7 or 8 states that I was really interested in. And my first property, I went into Northern Alabama, because it was on the list and I found a good deal. And in all honesty, some of the reasons weren't perfect, but it is a really good market. It did really well. It was in Huntsville, Alabama.
Right.
And one of the big perks for me is when I'm going to do my business trips, I would stay in Nashville. I love Nashville. And then I could just cruise down the 45-minute drive to Huntsville and do my real estate in the morning and have fun in Nashville at night. So we went there, started doing Huntsville, and I bought a bunch of properties there. We went into Kansas City, Missouri. I love that market. I went into Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm now in Eastern Ohio, so like Dayton, Toledo, over in that part. And in the fall, we got into Northern Florida, so like the Jacksonville and the smaller towns around Jacksonville. So that's kind of where we landed. I do know people are going, what about this market? There is a lot of good markets. There's a lot of good markets. People are going, Texas, Louisiana. There's lots of great markets out there. I'm not going to fluff off, but that's where I picked. So during this whole thing, as soon as I started investing in the States, it turned into like a hot topic. So my local RIA was like, hey, come talk. And I was like, I'm not sure I'm ready to talk yet, but they're like, no, we already booked you. You're coming in. You're going to talk about investing in the U.S. So I started talking about investing in the U.S. And I think that was 4 years ago in like October or something like that. And then I went, okay. And I don't know if you do name drops. Maybe I'll avoid name drops. But I was talking to this other podcast host down in the States. And he's like, start a podcast. Start a podcast. Grow your business. He's like, even if you don't know what you're doing it for, start a podcast. And so I did it. I started a podcast. We're hitting 3 years in January, doing this podcast every week. And that's what I did off the start. I didn't know why I was doing a podcast. I just tried to make as good of content as possible. So I'd teach a topic and try to like, off the start, it was just me and talk. And then, you know what? That's exhausting to basically come up with like a 15-minute speech every single week. So I started doing the guest show, and I still go on about every month or month and a half and try to teach a topic. But yeah, that's where it started to grow. And then I got some ideas. I started doing a referral business, which is a spinoff that you can do with a podcast where like people contact you and they're like, oh, I need a mortgage broker. Here's a mortgage broker, and they have referral fees. And here's a insurance company. Here's, because I was the guy for investing in the States. So you had this connection to go down into that for all the contacts, because people like start from square one. They don't even understand what a title company is because they don't use title companies in Canada. They use your like local attorney or lawyer is who closes the properties and does everything else. So it's a lot cheaper using a title company, but just lots of intricacies, like just little tiny things that are different, but similar, similar.
Right. So talk to us about scaling your portfolio. So you came to the States, you picked your markets, right? Like, okay, hey, I love it. And I'm not sure, you know, we don't have to get into all the nitty gritty on kind of what your you know, metrics were that you said, hey, these are the things I'm looking for, but you picked your markets. But then how did you pick your properties? How did you pick your property? I'm assuming you're using property management company. You're not. Okay. Just to clarify that. I'm like, if you figured out how to manage single family across borders, good for you. So you got your property management company. How did you vet all these industry partners and then move forward?
Okay. I'll tell you the way not to do it.
That's probably better, actually.
Part of it off the start was I bought some turnkey properties off the start, which people love or hate them. For me, I'm now in the process of selling anything I bought turnkey off. It doesn't perform the way anything that I do my own renovations does. Anyway, so off the start, it's a different country. I figured, you know what, let's buy a couple turnkeys just to get my feet wet. And it was the way I started was I went, okay, well, something would break at the house and they'd send a plumber over. I'm like, hey, can I get the receipt for that plumber? And they're like, oh, here's your thing from your property management statement. I'm like, no, I want the receipt. My accountant is demanding the actual receipt.
Right.
And so I could slowly, now I know a good plumber that's, you know, vetted. Now I know a good person who does handyman work. I know a good person that. And I sort of built my team out that way is how it started. And so you basically scaled off of the property managers because they had everything already set up, right?
Right.
And so I did that for a while, and then I started using some of those people to do the light renovations. And then it got into larger renovations, and it was a referral thing, right? I'd ask people when I saw them, like, who they were using. And sometimes that works, but it works a lot for property managers because usually property managers can handle a lot of people.
Sure.
So people are always willing to share their property managers, but people aren't necessarily willing to share their contractors.
For sure. Understood.
Because the contractor can only handle so many things, and everybody wants to scale. And even if that contractor isn't full, they'd like to be the one to fill that contractor in if he's good.
Sure.
So that was the tricky part. I actually went in about a year and a half ago, and I paid for a list of contractors in certain cities, which it sounds genius because it's trying one of those shortcut things like hiring mentors and stuff. But I went through the list and we hired all of them.
Wow.
And the first one was very quick. Their timelines, they were experts on timelines. If everyone else quoted 3 months, they do it in 1 month. But the work wasn't crisp. Like I'd have an agent go through afterwards if we were doing a flip, and they'd look at it and like the trim just isn't very sharp. It just, the countertop isn't secured. You can lift it up, like, but it looks pretty good at a glance. Your pictures look great, but when you start looking through it, it wasn't great. So I was like, okay, well, that's not our guy. I had one that was very into their own thing. So they always loved barn board, and every single house was covered in barn board, every inch of it. And so you're like, okay, well, if some people love that, and some people you're like, this is like downtown. Like I get it that it can be a thing like as a feature wall, but it's in every room. I'm like, it's too much for me anyway. And so anyway, what I did was I went through the list, and basically every time I switch markets, it's going through like three contractors to find one that's usually the one that's good. And it's not that the other ones are bad. It's just that there's ones that are much better than other ones.
Right.
So it's kind of a trial by fire. And it's one of the reasons I'm trying to avoid switching markets too often. It's better to go deeper into the market. And there is reasons why we're in five markets, but we're not actively buying in Indianapolis anymore. We're not actively buying in Kansas City anymore. Looking to get back into Northern Alabama, but I haven't bought anything there in about a year or two. But basically going deep into a couple markets instead of so wide.
Right. And that's a challenge, I think, even for those of us who are based here locally. I mean, you're going to go through multiple contractors before you find the one that's the right fit for you. So I don't think you're, that sounds like that's going to work. It's going to be that way here or there. So tell us about when you started this conversation, you said you run into financing challenges. So in Canada, they said, hey, we're not going to loan to you anymore. How did you overcome that obstacle?
Well, in the US, this is just off the start. Conventional lending isn't even an option, right? I don't have a social security number. So we were more like I just had to buy good enough deals that hard money would work. Some of those brokers, private money. And it just forced me to be more creative. And that is how that got around that part. I am actually in the process of getting an E2 visa, which is like a working visa for the United States. So when that's completed, I will have a social security number and I will have a visa to work there, even though I've worked myself out of lifting the hammers and doing that stuff. Like when I was in Canada, I used to go and install trim in kitchens myself, but I don't do anything anymore because legally I'm not even allowed to down there. So,
because
I don't have a working visa. So when I go down there, I'm just sort of peeking my head around, but I don't see a lot of my properties still as it is.
So you came to the States and you said, hey, I want to buy these properties. How many banks did you go through? How many lenders? Like, did you just start calling people and say, hey, you want to loan me money or how did that
work? I have a great tip for that, actually. Yeah. So off the start, I just started calling banks and it was just like, no. Everywhere I went, it was like the Colonel Sanders story. I was just going around and everybody was saying no. They're like, you don't have a social security number. You don't have a FICO score. You only have this Canadian credit. You don't use any of that. So I just started going. But I talked to a couple of them and they had some key words in their conversation. They'd be like, oh, you needed someone with a foreign national program. Okay, now I figured out at least what I'm defined as. So as a Canadian, I'm considered a foreign national. Okay. So I'm like, okay, so now let's... actually, there's a step before that. I got one of those black books from like those stores and I went through and I went to LinkedIn and I searched for like lenders in Alabama. And you literally will get a list of like 1,000 lenders, but you'll see that it's like common banks that keep popping up, right? The big ones. And you learn, okay, we're skipping Bank of America, we're skipping Chase, we're skipping anything that's like a big name that I've heard of, right? And you just message them. I pay for premium, message, same sort of thing. Like, hey, we'll lend to a foreign national. And you got a bunch, right? And then some of them were very helpful and they would refer you to, hey, I have a buddy I met at the trade show. He will do this and he'll do these things. But Yeah, LinkedIn was really powerful. Just go pay for it for 1 month. I think you get a month for free anyway. Go through and just message all these banks, and you'll find some of them will do it. Some of them have programs for nationals. If you go to all those hard money companies, if you listen to a lot of podcasts like I did, those ones that advertise on other people's podcasts, they will lend to Canadians because they have a different lending restrictions than Bank of America and Chase and the big guys, right?
Right.
So they can lend to Canadians. They have programs for Canadians. And the difference gets to be that some of them are better than other ones. And there's a large, because some of them are like, well, it's a little more risky, so we're going to loan to value way down, interest rate way up.
Right.
And then you can find ones that are anywhere in between, right? And so it's, sure. And their lending changes because they're basically not fly by night, but they have the ability to change their stuff so quickly that there could be the perfect lender for you 1 month, and then the next month you're looking for a different lender. And we buy a lot of houses. Like, we're doing about 3 a month. Well, at least for me, that's a lot of houses.
Yeah, that's a good clip.
Yeah. So, and then a lot, some of them are fourplexes and duplexes and stuff, but I'm constantly cycling through lenders, but there's really about 5 that I kind of use over and over again. I go to first.
Sure.
And cycle through them each time.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. So you went to LinkedIn and said, all right, we're just going to start pounding the pavement, quote unquote,
yeah,
or to find my lender. And that's how eventually you kind of wore the world down until it gave you what you wanted. So
but you're going to have the same problem as I had in Canada too, right? You're going to run out of money, right?
Right.
You're going to go, okay, well, I got this nice line of credit because all our houses in Canada are worth so much money, right?
Right.
And they're appreciating so fast. So we got so much equity. So let's set up a whole bunch of lines of credit and borrow against these things to go down there. But it doesn't matter. No matter what you're buying, because if you get more money, then you just want to buy bigger stuff, right?
Sure.
And so no matter what, you're going to run out of money. So you need to have a strategy to recycle this money, right? And then there's the obvious... what we've been mostly doing now is the BRRRRs, flips, and lease options. So that's what we mostly do. And lease options are actually amazing in the States. Like,
right.
There's so many people that want to get into houses, but don't have the ability because it's all based, like, they don't have the credit score for it. I just interviewed a person on my podcast last week, and they have a program in Canada and the US to build people's credit scores.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the typical one. If they're your tenant, you can have them, you can report to Equifax, like the rent, and it would build their rent based on the rent, you could build their credit. So you could show like rent payments that were going in, which is kind of a cool thing. Anyway, we got a total tangent. But anyway, what happens is you need more money and you need a way to recycle it. So what obvious thing I did, I started doing JVs, right? JV, tons and tons. And what happened was I got all these partners that had enough to do 1 or 2 properties at a time,
right?
And you just kept buying properties, right? And just take them on JVs and you're like, oh my God, my Thursdays are gone. My Fridays are gone. To do my weekly update, I'm going to be on the phone for like 10 hours on Friday, 10 hours on Thursday just to get through this.
Right.
And you're like, okay, I have these big goals. How am I going to get there? Because eventually it's going to eat up my Wednesdays, my Tuesdays, my Mondays. I'm like, when am I going to have time to even talk to the contractors? I'm going to be talking to all these partners. And it's
right.
It's too much.
So how did you unwind that?
It actually started with a back against the wall project. We had one that went out of plan. We were planning on not renovating it and using the rent to renovate it. But once we got into there, the tenants weren't paying, did an eviction in month one this is in Indianapolis, eviction in month one. Kicked everybody out. And you know what they did on the way out? They trashed the place.
Yeah, sure.
And destroyed everything.
Yep.
And so we're like, all right, we're into renovations in month one instead of in 13. And it realized, I'm like, okay, look, JV, do you have any money? No, I have the money for the down payment. Okay, let's start doing the private money thing. So let's start raising money. And that's what we've been doing. I've been taking on new JVs, but not very much more selectively than I used to. But mostly I like to take on private money. I have used private money and JVs in together, and it works in specific situations. It doesn't make sense otherwise, because you're like, why take on private money and a JV? Because you're giving away the equity and you're paying debt. doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But it does in specific situations if you have like, I get the JV to do the carrying costs on it,
sure.
Which could make sense. And if you have the right partner and you have big plans to go buy a lot of properties, it's a way to scale it. And because in all honesty, if I started making all the payments on all these properties, it just gets out of control, right? It's just like those wholesalers that have like this over this budget every month for their marketing. And they're like, yeah, no matter what, I have to make 20 grand to do that. That would end up happening to me. I've listened to enough shows to know that's not the way to do it, because I'm just going to pigeonhole myself. So I'd rather give a piece of the deal away to keep it reasonable.
Right, right. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Glenn, let's jump into the final four if we can. If you're to distill everything you know down to one piece of advice and you're giving it to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Jeez, I guess I probably should have planned for this, but one piece of advice, I would say, you know what? Don't give up on any of this stuff, right? Because like when I go to, like I said, when I went to banks, they say, no, you can't get lending. I go to banks all the time and they say no to stuff. And you start asking them questions like, why? And why can't I do this? And like, you give them a bunch of, go to a Canadian bank, give them a whole bunch of American checks, even though I have an American currency account in Canada. I also have banking in state stuff, but you give them a whole pile of checks that are American checks. They're like, oh, we're going to put a hold on these for like 2 or 3 weeks each one. You're like, why? What do I need to prove? And you're like, you can get around a lot of this stuff. You just ask some questions.
Right.
They're like, oh, we need to know it's going to clear. Well, here's statements. It's from my corporations in the States. Here's statements. Blah, blah. And I can walk in. I come in with my binder. Here's what you want. I don't want any holds in anything. And I know all the questions, but a lot of people just accept these holds. They accept stuff. And you're like, start asking the questions to dig deeper, to get around a lot of these things. A lot of people are going to tell you no. Your friends and family will say you can't invest in the States. Do your due diligence on everything. Ask why.
Right, right. No, that's absolutely true. That probably crosses a lot of more than just funding, but that's a great life kind of mantra no matter what. Yeah. Find out why and then come up with the solution to it. So that's great. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Reading my books every month. I listen to podcasts. I do accountability buddies. So I don't do the paid coaching, but instead I find people in a similar field who are excelling in their field. And we kind of do a call, and it's good for them. They bounce their ideas to me, what they're doing. And sometimes I can solve their problems. Sometimes they solve my problems. And sometimes just talking about your issues, you start hearing yourself and you're like, shouldn't be an issue. This isn't an issue really.
Right.
But there is solutions to this that they're so big. That's what I do. So I found like a wholesaler that was really good at wholesaling. And I have no competition with him because I buy from wholesalers. There's no fight in him at all, right? And I found someone who's like really good in multifamily, and I have chats with him regularly. And then we have a little mastermind. I don't know if it's mastermind, but we have three or four of us that get on a call on a Zoom, and we just talk about, hey, we're going to talk about a topic. And like, there's something that they share so much, because it's like we turn into these buddies, and I'm evaluating buying a 500 unit building. And they'll be like, these are my sheets. Here you go. I'm going to send them to everybody. And then we're going to go over them on this thing. And then we're going to analyze this deal together, see what you guys think. And you're like, man, it's such a good learning environment.
Right. No, that's fantastic. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
The podcast, I'd say, is my number one. Because a lot of people, I know you're not this one, but they have like an agenda to the show. And literally, I'd be like, someone will call me up and they're like, hey, how do we do a subject to deal? And I'm like, let's do a podcast. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go listen, read a book on it. And I'm going to listen to like 30 podcasts on it. And I'm going to come up with the most in-depth thing I could possibly give you for that. And do I get paid for that? No, not at all. And sure. I just spent like a whole month making these episodes. So I'm making these things over and over again, and I try to make them as in-depth as possible just to give back. And they don't really, like I said, they don't pay, and they don't actually have a connection to them, but it's karma. It comes out, and people will share stuff with you. If you're constantly just sharing stuff, just comes back. Especially if you're not expecting it, that's kind of how I do it.
Right. No, that's fantastic. And Glenn, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
You can find me on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube. It's called A Canadian Investing in the US podcast. glenn@glennsutherland.com is my email, or glennsutherland.com for my website. There's not a lot on the website. You can sign up for my email list. But yeah, that's basically it.
Man, that's awesome. Glenn, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate you coming on today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sam. It was great.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.